T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from Redbeard's downtown on 6th Street, I just had a bite of Nashville hot chicken, and the spices going right to the back of my throat. Hold on. It's the PM team, Chris Muller, rolling solo today. Andrew Filippone will be back tomorrow. Text us on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line at 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly, and make sure you follow us on Twitter. At 93.7 The Fan, driven by Shorty Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram locations, North Huntington and the North Hills. Craig, I need you to pop on the mic for a second, all right?
I'm here for you.
All right, thank you. You would think, you would say it's a fair characterization that what Mike Florio said about why Antonio Brown might have a legitimate case with regard to his banned helmet, you think he stated all of that pretty clearly, right?
Absolutely.
Apparently, Bob Yinzer on Twitter does not think so, and said, plenty of guys have just dealt with the new helmet. He's a diva, and you can't possibly be on his side. Was it not clearly stated that where Brady, Rodgers, and everybody else that was wearing a banned helmet got a full season grandfathered in and got to try out new helmets, Antonio Brown got the equivalent of 5 minutes when he did an end-around run, basically, and they weren't happy about it?
I thought that was the case he made.
Seems pretty clear, does it not? When did people in this town start rooting for the NFL? I know everyone hates Antonio Brown, but he probably has a case here.
I don't know where that started. I mean, if you had to choose one or the other, I'd rather see, what do they say, like when two teams you hate play, nobody wins, if that's possible, I guess.
Yeah, everyone does the old, oh, at this point, AB versus the NFL is root for the asteroid.
Yeah.
I get it. But they absolutely did not think he would move heaven and earth to try to find a less than 10 years old helmet. And when he did, suddenly they got mad. When he did, the NFL was like, wait a minute, we're going to have to come back around on this and just say, hey, people that do the helmets, can you just decide to ban them all? That's what gets me. That's the thing, is the fact that they knew he got one. He snookered them. He did. And they knew he did. So they just acted. Yet people hate it in this town when the NFL, like when Roger Goodell would unilaterally exercise his powers, did they not? When he would go after the Harrisons or Roethlisberger with the suspension, right? People always bellyached. How dare they? Right? The fact that when they try to do it to Antonio, it's good if they did it to a guy we don't like. That's ridiculous. It looks very obviously like the NFL could not believe Antonio Brown pulled one over on him and decided to get the helmet banned completely. But apparently he's all in with the Raiders, which does debunk the little theory I wanted to share, but it did cross my mind. And that's just the idea that he was doing this to be difficult, almost as like a flex, like a power play. I don't really, maybe he actually did, mess his feet up enough that he didn't really want to go to camp and go through all the rigmarole. This would be very much like Mike Tomlin letting him stay at a hotel instead of letting him stay at St. Vincent. He just said, Napa's great, it's better than Latrobe, but, I don't want to hang out somewhere else. I don't want to hang out with my teammates. I just want to do my thing. There was a thought in my mind that he was kind of just being difficult for the sake of being difficult and that there was no real high-minded end game here. But the fact that he showed up and he's good to go and they didn't have to go DEFCON 1 on him, which would be send the 5-day letter that Mike Florio detailed, the fact that they didn't do any of those things or have to go that route with any of those things seems to suggest that he really was that mad about the helmet, which is almost amazing. It's amazing to me that he was that mad about it, but it speaks also to what Mike Florio said, that for a lot of guys, this is the biggest decision as far as their apparel, their attire, their wardrobe, if you want to call it that, or their equipment that most players make. The funny part would be, too, if he picks a new helmet, which does seem like it's the likely outcome here at the end of the day, he picks out a new helmet, and somehow he's never tried it before and finds out that he plays even better with it. And then he decides that he has left like 200 catches on the table previous to this in his career by not wearing a helmet that he got out long, that he did even better with. I actually want him to endorse whatever helmet he ends up using this year. Like, just totally do a 180 pivot, and as soon as he starts wearing it, man, I love it. You know, do the usual AB, like, horse whisper. I love this helmet.
What if it goes the other way and he can't see the ball and it starts hitting him in the head?
Admittedly, that's actually funnier. If all of his complaints about it messes with my peripheral vision, my field of vision, the way I catch the ball, actually turn out to be exactly true, and he just, like, the ball starts doinking him. He doesn't even get his hands up. He doesn't even realize the ball is
doesn't
there.
Doesn't even see it coming.
Yeah, he just absolutely, he's getting hit in the face mask with footballs every single game because he can't see the ball. You know what? I don't know. Craig, did you ever play, like, Little League Baseball in a league that had no helmet cages versus one that did?
I never had to wear a helmet cage.
Okay, so this is so funny. Like, obviously, we're talking about 12-year-old Chris Muller versus all-time, like, great wide receiver. Westview Ross did not have helmet cages. I went and played fall ball after, like, my 12-year-old Little League season in McCandless. Just, I don't even remember why I did it. You had to wear a batting cage on your helmet. Or a cage on your helmet. I couldn't, I mean, I wasn't that good anyway, but I was noticeably worse with the cage there. Like, I could not tell. I felt, like, very uncomfortable when the ball was coming in and I could not see it correctly.
I played 1 year of football, and I'd never played a sport where you had a mask
on.
Wait
a minute. How old were you?
Eighth grade.
How much did you weigh?
I mean, I was conservatively probably 100 pounds.
What position did you play?
Wide receiver.
I was going to say, they should have put you at tackle.
I'd never played a sport where you had to wear a face mask. I played basketball growing up, a bunch of like other sports here and there. The first time I put on a face mask, I was like, I can't see anything. I'm going to get blindsided left and right.
Yeah, admittedly, I mean, again, I'm telling a story about me as like a little leaguer, but there was some part of me when he first said, it's my field of vision, like it messes with it, that understood it in a very basic sense. I mean, there's a reason Brady and all those guys don't want to wear those helmets. If Rodgers and Brady don't want to, I have to believe Antonio Brown's like not blowing smoke to everybody and not full of it when he talks about it. I would have to think that there's some legitimate utility towards getting to wear the helmet that you actually want to wear. All right, coming up, you heard what Mike Florio said. Do Ben Roethlisberger and or Mike Tomlin deserve sort of an apology, an exoneration for how they handled Antonio Brown during his 9 years with the team, given what's happened in Oakland? We're going to talk about that. And if you didn't catch what Mike Florio said about it, we'll be able to hear what he had to say about it coming up next on the PM team. This segment is brought to you by Pittsburgh's number one Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram dealer, ShorkyNorthHills.com. Big thank you once again to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, for coming on about 45 minutes ago at the top of the hour. That interview, by the way, and he had a lot to say about the Antonio Brown saga, if you want to call it that. It'll be up, if it isn't already, at 93.7thefan.com on the PM Team podcast page, as ace producer Craig Riley is doubtless working on a post right now if it's not already done. By the way, the time right now on 93.7 The Fan is 4:48, time brought to you by Goodrich and Geist. One of the things that, when this saga with Antonio Brown was not at the point that it is right this second, and the point that it is right this second is Antonio Brown showed back up. Drew Rosenhaus, who's like, you know, things calmed down at least to some degree when Drew Rosenhaus says, and is like inimitable little kind of whine voice, Antonio's all, like, you just hear Drew Rosenhaus, that very high-pitched voice. He always sounds like he's disgusted with you for even asking the question, right? When he says something to the effect of, when you just hear him giving the message, you feel like the message is probably one of calm, because Drew Rosenhaus goes, now, why is everybody, you know, you guys, why is everybody saying this? It was a safety issue. I'm trying to think who Drew Rosenhaus reminds me of when he talks, but he always just sounds like he can't believe that anybody thought X, Y, or Z was a big deal, basically. Where we are right now is Antonio Brown's there, and according to Drew Rosenhaus, he's all in with the Raiders. But when things were really ugly earlier this morning, a sentiment rose up that, and I thought this was a good thing of Bob Smizek to tweet, because I wasn't hearing it from anybody else. Bob Smizek, of course, longtime Post-Gazette columnist, tweeted, This has been said before but needs to be said again. Mike Tomlin took heavy criticism for his handling last year of Antonio Brown. In retrospect, now that we know the full jackass that is Brown, Tomlin deserves heaps of praise for his handling of Brown. I tend to agree with that because I subscribe to the theory that people love to sort of like fetishize coaches who get players to fall in line. Oh, I wish they were all taskmasters like Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick inspires fear in his play. Like, I don't know why people are so desperate for players to be put upon by the coaches, but here we are. They never, by the way, mention that Tom Coughlin tries to do the same thing as like the overall boss of the Jaguars, even though he's not the head coach, and that the players generally like to give him the middle finger and thumb their noses at him and tell him he's a jackass. But that's and he doesn't win big either. That's neither here nor there, though. So people love this idea of coach as guy that you know, really drops the hammer and is a taskmaster and takes players who might be discipline problems and frightens them into submission, right? I never subscribe to the theory that that's even possible because I think when you're dealing with grown men who are all making a lot of money, like even if you're only making 600 grand, you're still making a lot of money. But if you're making big money, like Antonio Brown was, I think it's very difficult for any grown man to tell another grown man anything. You either are going to deal with people who have generally a base level of respect or you're not. So I don't think Mike Tomlin, I mean, he was culpable to a degree. I called it Frankenstein's monster. That was what Antonio Brown was. That's what he created. But the more I think about it, he might have only had a little bit to do with that. He maybe gave it the jolt of electricity where he went, "It's alive!" and fully realized as like a nightmare. But Antonio Brown was probably always like this to some degree. And I don't think any amount of tough love or you're no different than anybody else from Mike Tomlin would have changed that. In fact, I think it's probably to his credit that he got as much out of him as he did. I haven't heard that sentiment expressed very often. What I have heard is a cacophony of local media rushing. Like, you imagine people tripping over themselves to give Ben Roethlisberger a pass on all this. Ugh, the national media that said it was Ben's fault. How stupid do they look? And it is, of course, another chapter in the never-ending local versus national media war as far as people who cover the Steelers. I've heard a ton of, see, everyone that was being mean to Ben Roethlisberger about things he said should take it all back. I have not heard a lot of, man, maybe Mike Tomlin, even if he was somewhat responsible, deserves a little bit of a diminished criticism for Antonio Brown, because how could we have possibly known he would be like this? And at least Mike Tomlin always had him playing, but for that last game of the season last year. Like, you would think you would have heard that, but you haven't. And I wish you would, because I think it's accurate. If you're going to give Roethlisberger a pass, and I'm fine with that, it seems now like he and Antonio Brown probably had the best working relationship they could have, given how proud each guy is. Probably a little soft-pedaling of the criticism for Mike Tomlin is warranted, too. This is what Mike Florio, though, had to say about it when I, more or less, and you're going to hear my question here, led into exactly what I just talked about now. Mike, what does all of this say? Because this has been theater of the bizarre from the minute he got to Oakland. About what does it say, though? Does it exonerate Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger to some degree? Both of those guys caught a lot of heat for the way that things went down with Antonio Brown. Tomlin for enabling this for years, Roethlisberger for criticizing him publicly. Do you think that this gets both of those guys largely off the hook for anything that went down in Pittsburgh?
I think it helps Roethlisberger more than it helps Tomlin, because to the extent that Antonio Brown has turned into this diva who thinks he can do whatever he wants and he's always going to get his way, Mike Tomlin's the first guy who allowed that. Once they recognized this guy has talent and he was getting it done and he's busting his ass on the practice field and he's having great performances in games, they decided to deal with the quirks instead of taking a hard line with them. And this notion that there's a separate set of rules for Antonio Brown, that's gotten baked into his DNA. And Mike Tomlin, I think, does have responsibility for that. But you know what? It was smart for the Steelers to sell when they did. And I'd love to know, and I tried to find this out last week, that the Steelers were dealing with the aftermath of Daryl Drake's passing, so I couldn't get an answer to it. I'd love to know if the Steelers knew this helmet issue was coming and that they decided now's the time to get out of this relationship, because on top of everything else, we're going to get ourselves into a situation where this guy's going to be pissed off about his helmet and he's going to refuse to play. And we know this bomb is ticking And let's, you know, on top of all of the factors, let's get out of this relationship before it goes completely off the rails.
That was Mike Florio about 35 minutes ago. Seeming to take more, I guess, of the public side here, that Ben Roethlisberger, if anybody, deserves maybe more of an off-the-hook sort of exoneration about Antonio Brown and the way he dealt with Antonio Brown, and not so much Mike Tomlin. I'll concede this much. Like, clearly Tomlin allowed some of it. Like, it was the kind of thing where Brown tested the limits to see, okay, how far can I go until the coach kind of lays any kind of smackdown publicly or privately on me, one that I'm uncomfortable dealing with. And clearly he pushed his boundaries here. But I think there's a sentiment that exists that Mike Tomlin, and you heard it, Mike Florio said he baked it into the DNA there with Antonio Brown. I don't know. You either are or you aren't that the day you come into the league. Right? Like, everyone's telling these stories too now about Antonio Brown. That we remember him when he was like a happy-go-lucky kid when he came in the league. Maybe, because maybe on some level there was a part of him that knew he had to perform to get paid. But I would imagine that the version of Antonio Brown we're seeing now always existed. Like, if Richie Incognito, Brown's new teammate, suddenly turned over like this new leaf and was happy-go-lucky, friendly Richie Incognito, nobody would be sitting here going, well, that must be what he's like all the time, because you saw the other version of him, the ugly side, the possibly, like, of, you know, possessing mental issues side of Richie Incognito, the guy who maybe needed to be committed. And before you say, wow, that's a big charge to levy, go look at some of the things Richie Incognito has been accused of doing. They're horrible. But if he had suddenly become friendly guy Richie Incognito, nobody would have bought it right away, because we saw the other part of him. Just because we saw the friendly AB, like the goofy, happy-go-lucky AB first, doesn't mean that this one wasn't always there, just kind of waiting for a chance to manifest himself. Up next, we're not talking AB. We're not talking helmets. We're talking Pirates. I am, by way of setting this up, a big fan of advanced stats. Sometimes to a fault. ERA, wins and losses, home or RBIs, those are tired. Batting average, who needs it? Let's talk on-base percentage. Let's talk slugging. Let's talk OPS, OPS+, FIP, XFIP, WHIP. Those are my stats. FanGraphs is my site. And that's why Neil Huntington was, for a long time, a GM I thought did a great job, a person I very much enjoyed talking to. But Neil Huntington has done what I thought might have been impossible. He has finally gone so far down the rabbit hole on stats that even I can't hang there with him. Wait until you hear. I will remind you, the Pirates are 7-27 since the All-Star game. Wait until you hear what he said that referenced FanGraphs, and while you're listening to it, you won't catch it, but I'm going to tell you, there is something hidden in an outwardly ridiculous statement that is more subtle and more damning to Neil Huntington than what he actually says that made headlines about simulations. You're going to hear quite a quote, and I think what the subtext of the quote says is worse than the obvious part. That's coming up at the top of the hour. Fan weather's brought to you by Sun Chevrolet and McMurray. Join Sun Chevy for their All-Star Open House all month long. Open the door to a new Chevy. 87, nice day out right now. 90 for a high tomorrow, although it could have rain in the forecast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.